Thanks, Verena, for those welcoming comments, and Suzanne, yours as well. And Verena, thank you very much for lending me this watch. In an era when big watches are all the go, I'm not sure I'm going to leave with it this afternoon, but it might help keep me on time. There's probably no subject matter that fills the books of bookshops and libraries, certainly in the business area, than around leadership. And we just think of, there seems to be a new leadership tome that comes out almost every week. And those that subscribe to the management publications, there's always just this little précis of what that book is. And I've got a whole list of books that are lined up to read. I'm actually more of a fiction reader. And I have at least two or three books on the go at one time. I'm also a biographical reader as well. And I try and squeeze in every now and then a business book. But I've got to say, in my life balance, somehow the business reading tends to sort of slip to the back of the book pile. But it's an issue and an area that clearly does have a lot of focus. And what I wanted to do this afternoon is, in one sense, just provoke a couple of different thoughts in our mind about talent. And I'll talk about how we think about talent at ANZ. But I wanted to leave us with a thought that I actually don't think there is a talent crisis. I don't think there is a talent crunch. There is, if we keep on doing the things that we're doing, we will have a talent crisis. The crunch, if you're feeling one at the moment, is because the way in which talent is being managed in our organisations is resulting in a scarcity of it. And I'll talk a little bit about sort of where I'm coming from there, but my experience has been there is plenty of talent out there. It's the leadership challenge to really access it. And I think that goes in part to some of our processes, but it also goes to the way in which we think about what talent is in an organisation. It goes to worldviews that are very conventional around what talent looks like and what it needs to contribute within an organisation. So I'll provoke you with some thoughts that it actually isn't this big beat-up that there's a talent crisis on and there's a war for talent. I'm just going to spend 2 minutes just giving you a plug for ANZ. It's a great organisation. And I'll just stand back from it a little bit, though, because Verena made some nice comments, and I'll just talk about some of the metrics which would say, is the path that we're on working for us? And I think the wonder in business is you've got to really find your own path. There's not a set pattern that any of us can pick up and say, I'm applying that in my organisation. But some of the things that we've discovered that we like, if we look at customer satisfaction, we lead the major banks with Court St George, we're chasing Bendigo Bank, the regional banks, that we've really broken out from the banks, and in large part that comes down to the work that we've been doing within the organisation with our people. This comment about breakout, let me just get rid of it now. It is actually designed to give a sense of a violent force, creating something quite different, to break out of the normal way in which you may expect the bank to be. Most people may have heard about breakout at ANZ through the program, the breakout program. Breakout as a program is a 2 to 3 day program. We've put 24,000 people through this over the last 5 years. It's been an enormous commitment. If you went along to breakout, and there's some ANZers here, it would feel like personal development. For those who have undertaken any personal development, the first time you sort of have that look into yourself and you become more aware, certainly of yourself and perhaps choices that you didn't realise you had before and the way in which you might be, that's new news for people who haven't been in that space. And when you do this for 24,000 people, it is new news for them, and they've got insights into themselves and how it is they might be different, either with each other at ANZ or frankly in life generally. So customer satisfaction breakout is a big part of that, reflecting from within the organisation. We're certainly the most efficient bank. Our cost to income ratio, we've led the other banks down to the lowest cost to income ratio. If you look globally across the banks with market cap of more than $20 billion, we're in the top three globally, and we've not done that through huge manpower headcount reduction programs. We've done it through growing the top line and just watching efficiency within the organisation. We enjoy the highest staff engagement scores in any of the ASX 20. We use Hewitt's as a measure. We benchmark against other companies. 14 of the other ASX 20 use Hewitt's, and our staff engagement score is higher than anyone else's. So we like that one as well. For those who work with the analyst and investor community, there's a publication that comes out each 6 months called the Corporate Confidence Index. People familiar with it, you will have seen it around, certainly your investor relations people will have it. The strength of the management team at ANZ is rated above peers, and always the Corporate Confidence Index really rates the top 50 companies around across 25 odd dimensions, and the strength of management consistently comes out as being above peers. So I'm going to put a punctuation point there on the advertisement, but it's more to say we actually like what it is we're seeing. I'm not talking even there about total shareholder return. If you're an ANZ shareholder, then you'd like that one as well. When I think of talent, I think of it in two buckets. One is probably the area where most people think about, which is about leadership, and we talk about the pipeline of talent coming through, and I'll talk about that. But I'll leave you with the thought that the fundamentals around leadership, I don't think, have changed. What makes an effective leader now is what's made an effective leader for many, many, many years. And I'm going to talk about the way we think about that leadership pipeline of talent coming through the organisation. But I'm also going to spend some time talking about the other talent, and what I call that is really the best of the rest. And that's not so much the best people, but it's how do we get the best of every individual that sits in our organisation, because it's their talents, if we can bring those out within the organisation, that really result in significant organisational improvement. Let me just turn to leadership talent first. I made the comment before that I think we're often constrained, this notion of there's a talent shortage, I think we're often constrained by very traditional views about what talent is. And why, I'll just illustrate just an interesting exercise. You can try this in your own organisation. It'll give you a sense of just how constrained I think we often are in large organisations. The top 30 managers at ANZ get together every 4 months. It's an alignment engagement process. A couple of weeks ago, we had them together. We typically have the morning very business-focused and the afternoon around organisational issues. I ran a session around our talent, our leadership talent bench coming through the organisation. How do you do that with 30 people in an afternoon in a way where you can have some real conversation about the quality of the people coming through? Pretty simply. And I think that's a lesson certainly for me. The simpler you can keep things in life, the better they seem to work. What we did, we were in a room. I took them to a room. We're a bit lucky to have a room that's probably about this size, a little bit larger. And the previous day I had laid out on the floor the organisation. And it had the CEO. I got a bit hierarchical with this. We had the CEO there, and I had John, because sort of John's got sense of who he is. I had him as a purple. It was a royal colour. I then had John's direct reports, and there's 9 of those laid out. Plenty of space. Helps if you've got lots of space to do this. And then I had laid out beneath them the direct reports of that level. So really you've got John and the next 2 levels of the organisation. And all I did, I just sent people an email about a week before the meeting and said, bring with you your most valued, bring with you the name of your most valued direct report and do some thinking about where you see that person's ultimate potential. So just write it on a piece of paper. Don't send it to me. Just write it on a piece of paper. And also bring with you the names of 2 people at the next level down who you see have got extraordinary potential you see coming through the organisation. If you do this exercise, you've got to have a few ground rules. You've got 30 people there and they're all looking at these jobs and CEO jobs and actually my job's there as well, and actually I wouldn't mind that job. But the point I made to them, we're not going to talk about anyone in this room. So this is you speaking for your people. So anyway, we moved into the room. I got them to just write those names down, 1 name on each bit of A4 like that. Big bold print because we're all going to look at it. There were no chairs or tables in this room. We're just all sort of standing around. And got them to place that sheet of A4, they had 3 sheets each, of course, 1 name for their immediate report and 2 for the next level down. Place the name at the role that they saw could be that person's ultimate potential. And they took a few minutes. I mean, adults are like children in one sense. You give them a sort of an interactive activity like that and you can feel the energy in the room. They like it. And they did. They set about sort of placing their names really on this organisation chart. And then they all sort of stood back and I said, well, you know, what do you see? And someone sort of said, well, it's interesting. The names appear to predominantly be in the divisions in which they are now housed. Okay, does it have to be that way? No, because actually I could see that person working over there. So, okay, that's good. Well, there's not many women. And then someone said, oh, I think there's enough. Well, there wasn't. So again, it just depends what your worldview was. But something that was very apparent to me as they were putting these names down was that no one had put a name down that saw that person go beyond their own position in the organisation. And all of us have probably sat through career development meetings in our life where you sort of say, well, what's this person's ultimate potential? Well, often at a stretch, people can see them doing their own job, but could this person ever be my boss? Most people just choke at the notion that, you know, someone who reports to me now could ever be my boss. And that's what happened. And the result of that was we didn't have anyone on the bench for the jobs reporting directly to John. So I said, okay, well, we're just going to repeat the rules again. We're not talking about people in this room. You've just got to step yourself out of this. We're talking about you speaking for your people. So can you just, within this instruction again, I can't believe that we don't have people who can be seen as future managing directors of these large divisions. So let's just do this again. And sure enough, we ended up with some names and we ended up with 1 potential future CEO. So John was sort of like a little bit relaxed, but it says something, I think, about how constraining our views often are. And this is just a very practical example of, you know, when we sit down and we have conversations about talent, what are we bringing? I think when we say there's a talent shortage, we often think of the world as it is as well. Well, there are a whole bunch of women who are not participating in the leadership cadre in the world in which we know it. And yet we make incredible predictions about the future, often based upon just what we know now. And I think there are there are plenty of sources of talent out there. And I'm not even getting into geography now. We could get into what's available coming through India and China. But I think there's a real challenge here for us in the way in which we think about talent and the mindsets and, frankly, the biases that we bring. So what do we do at ANZ to help overcome this, apart from doing activities like that, which is actually a very useful activity because it gives you an agenda to have some real conversations about people that the group can, as a group, participate in those conversations. I'm just going to talk about a couple of things, and I'm not sure these processes, certainly the framework is much different to what others might be doing, but I'll just touch on a few things which I think are a bit interesting, and then a bit about the process that we think of. And again, I'm just talking about the leadership pipeline of talent coming through the organisation. Then I'm just going to talk about what I call the best of the rest. You've got your talent plan. Our talent plan is firmly anchored in our business strategy. So we have Anne Hatton sitting on table 12 there, and we're in partnership with Hudson around graduate recruitment. Now, a very clear area of focus for us from a business perspective is around expansion in Asia. Now, we have to be careful how we say that because the market always gets very jittery, but more so than any other banks, we've made it clear that we're going to go wisely into Asia. And we've got some very deliberate programs around and targets around the number of graduates that we're recruiting who will be a source for really our Asian interest over really the next many, many years. We recruit about 300 graduates a year. It's a huge program. And in this last year, I'm pleased to say we've 15% of our graduates have got Chinese ethnicity, which is part of this focus. It complements some very targeted recruitment that we're doing up through Asia as well. So the general point is that in thinking about planning for talent, it's got to reflect what the business strategy is. We identify talent. We work with search firms around what we call a radar. So we might not have a vacancy, but I've got a very clear sense who's out there, and there are certain talent pools that we target. Females are one of those, so that's good news. We focus on our employment brand in terms of how we go about attracting talent as well. Now, we're fortunate that we've got a great employment brand and have had for a number of years, so that's great. But probably the most interesting thing about attraction, the Corporate Leadership Council did a set of work some time ago where the single largest determinant of whether someone took a job was the reputation of the boss. And so this comes back to leadership again, and it makes sense if you think about it. If you've got an opportunity for a great job, but you do your own sort of hunting around of who's my boss going to be, will I like working for that person? Will I actually learn something from that person? If you end up with a no to that answer, there's probably not much chance that you're going to take that job. So, again, this comes down to just how important leadership is, that reputation of boss is absolutely critical in our attraction strategy. So making sure we've got very good leaders in place is critical as well. We have, and this is under the area of just integrating, so we have people coming into the organisation, and I'm also thinking about people who move within the organisation into other parts of the organisation. So for people coming into the organisation, again with our graduate program, we have a very intensive one-week orientation program for these 300 odd grads, which is residential, gives them a good sense of who ANZ is, gives them a good network as well across the organisation amongst the other grads, gives them good exposure to the business as well. All the top team go and spend time with them during that week. They do projects for the top team through the year and get just some great exposure. So, you know, how we go about integrating. For people who change levels in the organisation, we have a process which is called What's Your 90-Day Edge? So this is, and I think we often see this when we move people through the organisation, and particularly some stretch promotions. What occurs in the first 90 days will often set a tone for how that assignment's going to turn out. And so we have some very specific conversations around what that person's 90-day edge is going to be. So that's before they get into the job, but there's a process through that 90 days where they can, in one sense, hear themselves have conversations about what it is they wanted to achieve through that 90 days. And just in terms of a framework, we've talked about planning, we've talked about how we go about identifying, how we go about attracting, and how we go about integrating. Just retaining and motivating staff is absolutely critical, of course, and that's where both climate, leadership and recognition are absolutely critical. So when we talk about climate, breakout is a big part of that. How do we create this different climate where people feel that they can, how we talk about this at ANZ, they can bring their whole self to work, where the interaction quality that sits between individuals in the workplace is quite different from any other large corporate they might think about working. So climate's absolutely critical, and recognition as well. Just in terms of processes, so how's all this actually work? That's a framework, the way in which we think about talent, but the process itself, we have a series of talent councils that sit through the organisation. No HR people sit on those councils. They're led by line managers. They've got cross-division representation. And so how this works, we have at the base of the organisation, if I can call it, that for the graduates and for the really entry-level management roles, we have what we call our Future Leader Program, where we really look to identify the top 1% of these entry-level managers. And there's a council that uses an assessment process for identifying people in that category, and then development processes get built around each of those individuals at that very entry level. We have at the next level, which is really at the mid-level manager, an emerging leader program, where again we look to identify, in this case it's a little larger, it's the top 5%. Of people in the middle management group. And again, we have that emerging leader program led by a line manager, and it's a group of about 7 people who are actively engaged in assessment processes and the development plans for those people. And then we do the same at what we call our executive level, where we seek to identify the top 10% of people at the executive level. So this is, in one sense, each year we're really working with the top 30 of that group, where we've got, again, another talent council that is working around the assessment and development of those people. And then at the very top of the organisation, we identify the top 20%. So this is really looking at the top 120-odd senior executives. Who are the people we see have got that ultimate potential? Hopefully they'll sort of end up further than where they did on the floor on that afternoon. The people we see have got that ultimate potential to really be the leaders of the corporation for the future. We use a set of lens right through those councils, which is very consistent. So when we think about leadership, we think in terms of leadership capabilities, and there's six of those. We screen for learning agility. There's been a lot of work around learning agility as one of the key predictors of future potential. We screen around insight and motivation. So the self-awareness piece is absolutely critical in our experience. We've got a template of what we call key experiences. So this is, has someone led a startup? Has someone turned around a business? Has someone had offshore experience? So the template that we think of in terms of, not everyone can't have all these experiences, but they should have most of them. And lastly, these councils have what we call key questions, and the questions are, what's the signature strength of this person and what are the potential derailers for them? So we've got, certainly in terms of process, what I love about it as an HR person is it's owned by the line. We don't have HR people sitting in these councils. My group supports the work that the councils do, but it has very strong line ownership. And that's, if we think about talent, that's the leadership element in all of that. Absolutely critical, and just some of the things I've mentioned, just how people feel about their job, in large part is determined by the quality of leadership. How people are engaged or not, in large part is determined by the quality of leadership. So that process that I talked about is absolutely critical. But let me just now turn to this best of the rest and just leave some thoughts here. I talked about staff engagement before. Many organisations, if you're using staff engagement as a measure, I'm not talking about satisfaction, but staff engagement as a measure, for many of us, there would be something often more than 50% of people not saying, I'm engaged. And if we're talking about talent and we're talking about the scarcity of talent, there's something about just accessing that which sits within each of our organisations. And I think leadership is one element of that. But just let me leave you with a couple of thoughts around the way work is, and will work be this way in another 10 or 15 years' time? And I was just having a conversation at the table before. I don't think work has changed much. Certainly not in 50-odd years, and I just recently looked at a Sander promotional video of 50-odd years ago, which had people rocking up to work in suits and ties, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, offices, a hierarchy not too dissimilar to it to the way it is these days in most organisations. And the Gen Ys coming through won't cop it. I've got two daughters that are Gen Ys and they keep on keeping me pretty much informed of what's on and what's not. But I think there's a wake-up call here for all of us. If we want, we will have a talent shortage if we keep the same sort of settings in place that are in the workplace, that have been in the workplace for many, many years, if we keep those. And there's something about flexibility, choice and self-control that's absolutely critical to this generation coming through. And not just the Gen Ys, the baby boomers who are looking for flexibility at the back end of their longer than expected careers, they're looking for that as well. For the HR practitioners here, I think there's some messages as well about fundamentally changing some of our core processes which have not changed since the US Army set the benchmark for these things back in the 1930s and 40s. So I'm talking about gap-finding performance management systems, gap-finding development systems. I'm talking about pay for performance, which works for some but not for most. We own these processes, and our willingness to keep them in place, I think in large part, can explain why it is that this other piece of talent that I'm talking about, accessing the best of the rest, is a challenge for many organisations.